Hello, basketball gamers, and welcome to episode number 157 of the NLC podcast. I'm your host, Andrew, Master of Webs. I'm joined by Arcane, also known as Ben, or other way around usually, Master of Apparel.
Hey, everyone.
And also with us again this week, Kenny, Master of Story Threads.
G'day, mate.
Just to really emphasize that it's three Australians on this podcast about basketball and basketball video games.
I wanted to do it in a really bad, like, American trying to do an Australian accent like the Spurs broadcaster does, so I hope that came across.
Usually when they do that as a bad Australian imitation, it ends up Cockney.
Yeah, usually.
Oh, yeah, I can do an Aussie accent. Check this out. Good day, mate. How are you going? And just kind of goes really Cockney. So, but we are not just here to make fun of people making fun of Australian accents. We are here to talk about basketball and basketball video games. Of course, some news this week and also what we've been playing. But we're going to tip things off with some news on NBA 2K16. Specifically, we got a new patch, gentlemen. We did speculate in previous episodes whether we'd be done with any more patches for NBA 2K16. They did push out one last gameplay-oriented update, and that's patch version 6, V6, or patch number 6. Either way, it is the 6th official title update for the game. And just reading off the patch notes here, it includes updated player portraits for a number of players, tuning the effectiveness of long outlet passes for players with the break starter badge, delay branching from the Kobe Bryant back size-up, reworked the size-up dribble launches to prevent unnaturally explosive first steps, tuned missed chances to deep down court and cherry-picking. So a lot of people probably in Pro-Am not very happy about this. In fact, I have seen some negative comments about those tuning on social media. And also, they've docked vertical and rebounding when you go behind the basket. Don't reset 3-in-the-key offensive timer in baseline behind paint for human control blacktop players. So basically a bunch of gameplay exploits have been patched. And as I said, Kenny, yeah, I've seen some people not too happy about it on social media.
Yeah, I could imagine. I noticed that when I wrote that article. No, wait, it wasn't the article. It was the tweet about being thankful about the 3-second rule. Had somebody challenging me to a one-on-one game, which I don't know how that could happen, but, you know, that's beside the point. But, yeah, there's always going to be opposition to those exploit fixes.
Which, I guess it really exposed the people who've been using the exploits.
Absolutely, no. Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're going to use the... You can't complain about cheese and people using cheap tactics when you're using them yourself, really. Well, I suppose you can. You're just a dirty hypocrite for doing so. But... yeah, I never have any objections to tuning the game so that it's fairer. And, I mean, this is what we see all the time. People saying, oh, cut out the cheese, get rid of the cheapness. And then they do. And people complain. I mean, what do you want?
Yeah, so many people wanting a pizza and just not wanting to admit it.
It's a good way of putting it, yeah.
The 3-cheese pizza.
Oh, yeah. So, cheesy crust.
Oh, yeah.
So I haven't actually played the game since the patch came through. It's only out on PlayStation 4 at the moment. The PC version and Xbox One version should be receiving it fairly soon. There is no approval process on Steam, but I guess just working some things out with the PC version perhaps, but hopefully not a long wait for that, and we'll post updates on the site and in the forum when we get some more news on that. Ben, did you say you played since the patch came out, or was your before the patch came out?
It was just... probably a couple of days before. I think when I last played was like the day after we recorded last, and that, and yeah, that was filling around more with the rosters and stuff in my league.
My league, that's right, because you have started the
restart
with the historical rosters, and we'll get into it a bit more later. But you and I, of course, played a game together last week, Kenny, finally.
Yeah, we did, yeah. It was an interesting experience. Looking forward to
it. So hopefully we can get on that tomorrow. That's usually the time.
Yeah, I think so. We might be able to get on tomorrow. We'll see what happens. But yeah,
but
usually it's tomorrow.
We'll have to see, you know, whether we can, how these, whether we notice a difference when next time we play in Pro-Am, because obviously this is geared towards the exploits that are really being exploited by in the Pro-Am and other online arenas, more so than against the CPU, which you can usually, once you learn how that works, or you can just turn down the difficulty, turn up the sliders against the CPU. If you really want to get an easier win, there is a way against the CPU. A bit harder with an online opponent.
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely interested to see whether it does affect the online play, because, it's been a frustrating last few weeks for the Fighting Irish, so I'm hoping we can get a few more wins.
I'm glad to see that they haven't patched out the ability for 70 overall players to actually not suck, so I still have a chance to do something productive on the virtual hardwood, so I'm happy to see that. But we'll give some more impressions after we've played the game with that patch, but it's nice to see them still patching those exploits at this point of the year.
Yeah, it's definitely a nice touch, and something that I guess it constantly needs to be looked at, and it's very reassuring that they are.
And also probably means that they're keeping an eye on that for NBA 2K17 as well.
Yes.
Well, here's hoping.
Yeah, that way they don't have to double dip and patch it in again later if that's in for next year.
Although, I think a few years in a row they had to patch in the, what is it, in the replay where you can disable the icon, the player icon. A few years in a row they actually ended up patching that back into the game with each release, so hopefully it won't be a situation like that. But hopefully these fixes will remain in the game, but clearly they are on top of these things. Glad to see them making these changes, but I said in the news post, and I said not as a confirmation, but merely speculation, I think this is probably going to be the last significant update for 2K16. I could be wrong. I mean, I thought number 5 was going to be the last one, but I do remember, I think we said, Ben, that we thought there might be a small fix update at the time, which this obviously is.
Yeah, and I think I was thinking more like more content in terms of new shoes or accessory stuff.
They did portraits. That's content.
True. True. Good point.
Not the content we were expecting, but still, nice to see all the same.
I agree with that.
But we'll offer some more impressions after we've played the game a bit more with the patch in place. And that actually leads us to a question that we got this week. And as always, thank you for the topic submissions. As always, we love that you're interested in the show and tuning in every week and sending in the submissions. And this is from MP3, one of our loyal listeners, in which case I also have to apologize for the British accent I did at the top of the show and to any other British listeners we have. But this question is something we haven't really we've kind of touched on it before, but not in much detail, and certainly pertains to the complaints about the NBA 2K16 patch in some respects. But the question is, do you guys think that the game makers, the developers, can sometimes over-patch games, creating more problems and often ruining stuff that was actually a good part of the game? And goes on to mention that he kind of felt that was the way with the shooting in NBA Live 15. I would certainly agree with that. With Live 15, shooting was very all over the shop. To throw a very Australian accent, Australian saying out there. And it's also said that he's enjoyed 2K16 less and less since the release, and what are our thoughts on that? And just to tip things off, guys, I think absolutely some patches can ruin games, and the example that I throw out there that I think that you guys will both agree with is NBA Live 10.
Yes, that was on my list of games I was going to say. You know, that second patch really killed it. For me, that game, like we've stated in the past, was solid out of the box. Like, I didn't have any issues with it when I was playing it, and then patch 1, I didn't really notice too much of a change, but patch 2 just ruined it, and I stopped playing that one so early, and then I just focused on the NCAA game.
Well, I couldn't do that because I was region locked on 360, but I probably went back to NBA Live 06 on PC at the time, which didn't get a patch that I didn't make. No official patch anyway. I mean, you played a lot of Live 10, obviously, Kenny. And for me, like Ben alluded to, the way that second patch really just, it affected the speed and the arc on the alley-oops, and also the way the AI would break down if like a big on the perimeter would get the ball, and the play would break down, so they would just either run out the clock and toss up a long two, or they didn't know how to improvise once the play broke down after that second patch, I felt.
Yeah, there were definitely a lot of issues when it came to, like, I guess, running freelance-style plays for the CPU, and so much to a point where I actually saw Hashim Thabit throw up a fadeaway three-pointer once, and I was like, whoa, this game is kind of broken.
Yeah, yes. No, I remember a lot of issues with that. And as you said, Ben, I kind of stopped playing Live 10 after that because the second patch just messed things up. And I touched on this in a Monday tip-off article a few weeks back, but support has gotten so much better for the basketball games in recent years. I mean, you get one or two patches a year, maybe, back in the day. In fact, I even remember having to do PC patch petitions. Almost stumbled over that. PC patch petitions. Just to get patches from EA back in the day, because it was a much bigger deal to patch games. These days, we are getting four or five updates a year. There are still problems, as MP3 alludes to, with shooting in Live 15, and there are some things in 2K16 that I've seen a few people not too happy about, not just the exploits. I mean, hey, if you're going to complain about no cheese, then, well, I don't know what to say to you. In a PG podcast, anyway. But there are still problems with that, but I find that it's perhaps a little better than back in the day because you would only get those one or two patches. So if we didn't get the patch 3 for NBA Live 10, if we'd gotten that patch 3, maybe we could have corrected that issue, but unfortunately we didn't.
Yeah, I think a third patch, it would have been a nice addition, I suppose. But as you said, I think like a lot of people had already gone off NBA Live 10 by then. But, you know, I mean, obviously I didn't, but I don't.
No, you gutted it out for a long time, my friend.
Yes. I think I had NBA Live 10 and then I didn't buy another NBA game for the PlayStation until NBA 2K13. No, wait. No, I bought that for the PC, so it would have been 2K15. That was my next PS3 purchase, so... Yeah, I did stick with Live 10 for a long time, and pretty much until the server didn't allow me to upload any more stuff to it. So, yeah, I don't know, looking back, I'm just thinking, wow, that's a lot of time to be spending on a broken game. But yeah.
We I think we've done that a lot over the years, and not just with games that have been broken by patches or desperately need patches, but... I think we've, especially old school gamers, we're used to making the most of what we had because we remember the days when it was two dots for eyes and
if you were lucky.
No steel button for the PC version until NBA Live 98, even though we all had gamepads that had more than two buttons and things like that. But it is frustrating because obviously you can't do anything until the next patch comes through, and you usually can't, especially these days on consoles, you can't, and Steam as well, because it pushes through the updates automatically. You can't play online without the latest patch, so you need to have the latest patch, but sometimes that previous version of the game worked better, so it definitely is a frustrating issue. And I would agree with the NBA Live 15 shooting, which is why I was so glad to see the sliders in NBA Live 16. And we do need to be able to tweak the game ourselves. There's obviously going to be things that we can't tweak that need to be tweaked under the hood, but the more that we can change without having to rely on patches, the better. I mean, that's the whole thing. People not liking the day one patch, the idea of releasing a quote-unquote broken game at launch and then fixing things up with the user base being the beta testers, I think that's a bit of an exaggeration.
I mean,
at times,
even even in the NBA 2K11 theme song, Snoop Dogg was talking about sliders, so obviously he knows the importance of them.
Well, if Snoop Dogg says it, you know, I did love it in that. That is one of my favorite themes, actually, special themes for a basketball game, just the way he worked the gameplay lingo in, the gamer lingo in, with the basketball gaming lingo especially. But any more thoughts on patches, guys? Any other games that you can... I'm trying to think of anything else that's been really ruined. Live 15, I would agree with, as I said, definitely Live 10. I can't think of anything with 2K... that's really jumped out at me that hasn't been mentioned.
That's open. I mean, it'd be nice that, you know, that there'd be obviously less patches in that, so that way they can prioritize or focus on the next game and that. But yeah, obviously, it is kind of good in a way that they... It's kind of... Yeah, the pros and the cons, yes. So it takes away from the next game, but it does help, you know, in terms of the current game and that. So, yeah, it's...
Better they fix these things than just say, we'll buy next year's game, yeah. Because that doesn't... have a whole lot of free goodwill.
Yeah.
I was going to say free will. I guess we are slaves of these games at the end of the day sometimes.
I think that, you know, making more patches for games just kind of helps build the customer loyalty, because if they see that you're doing your best trying to fix like the existing game, then the next game they're going to think that you're going to have that same commitment to that one. So yeah, it is like a good exercise in goodwill, not free will.
A double-edged sword, absolutely, but I'd much rather have the patches than not. It is just a shame when they do break the game, which we have seen in the past, but hopefully we'll see less of in the future, I guess we should say.
It's hoping, yeah.
Yeah, fingers crossed. So, Ben, you found an article that was interesting this week about freemium-like content in sports games and advertising and things of that nature, and it was posted over on Engadget.com. It was a public access article, which is kind of like the soapbox, which is how we got you on the staff, Kenny.
Yep.
The NLSC soapbox.
Just mousetrapped him in with that.
So missed a couple of articles. Hey, would you like to create some more content for us, Kenny? I'm lazy. I don't want to write it. I'm a lazy admin. That's why I'm doing 4 pieces of original content every week.
And now you've realized how lazy I am with my posts. So yeah.
But we're all mad here. So this article is talking about, as I said, freemium-like content and especially ads, and talks about a lot of the ads being in sporting games, like the Sprint Halftime Report presented by Sprint in NBA 2K15, which is certainly a thing, and kind of complaining about the price of games not being offset by the advertising being intrusive and saying, well, where does it end up? Are we going to have commercial breaks, inadvertent whistles by the referees, like how much realism we're going to allow into the game? I mean, I wouldn't actually mind some bad calls. That would kind of be realistic if there was at least a slider to turn that on and off or something.
That again, could be double-edged sword. It's like, how many controller throwing moments would there be then?
it's true. I mean, that is why I certainly make it optional. Yep. But as to his point about the advertising, I do see the point, but I have to admit, I don't find the advertising particularly, and you might accuse me of being a tool and in the pocket of the developers. No, I honestly don't feel any more bombarded by the advertising in NBA Live or NBA 2K than I do watching an NBA game, probably less so because there's no commercial breaks. So I must admit, I'm not too bothered by the advertising. I feel it's fairly organic.
Well, see, the only line that sort of gets me, I mean, is the, you know, when they come through the halftime break and, you know, the Gatorade mention, you know, we've refreshed ourselves with Gatorade. It's kind of corny, maybe.
It's a bit forced, I'll,
yeah. You know, if it's not too poorly written or even spoken and all that stuff, then, you know, it can make it seem less, we'll say, overly forced in that sense, like just thrown in there for the sake of it kind of thing or something like that. and where it's apparently less natural.
Very obvious, a bit on the nose.
Yeah, kind of thing.
So,
But yeah, I mean, the advertising factor is a part of a game. Yeah, I can understand, you know, the whole idea of, you know, there's the whole debate thing with a lot of sponsors, you know, it should offset some of the costs towards the patrons and such like that. But I think it's different in video games, because I think the companies actually have, like, the gaming developing companies have to sort of pay the licensing to get that in, so there's kind of an added expense to try and...
The licensing, all the legends, yeah. The NBA license, the cost of maintaining the servers, you know, there's more costs involved, absolutely.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's... I can understand his point of view in ways, but knowing, or potentially knowing, that yes, that people do want some form of that authentic broadcasting sort of feel, but it comes at a cost, and to be able to get those companies in there, and as well as the legends and stuff that you mentioned. So, but yeah, I do wish in ways it would make the costs for us a bit cheaper, but it's not going to happen.
So, Kenny, you're actually doing marketing.
Right, yes.
So what's your expert analysis on this? This is the whole reason we brought you onto the podcast.
Right. I mean, as a consumer, I guess it doesn't really bother me all that much, like seeing those brands advertised, because it just, it makes it feel more authentic, because you don't go through an NBA broadcast without seeing like heaps and heaps of, you know, whether it's the scoring table or, you know, just like the on-screen ads or the native advertising, which is like where they try to incorporate the advertisement in their natural conversation. So like all that stuff, I just think it makes for a more authentic experience. And that's what we're looking for as sim basketball gamers. We want to have like the most realistic presentation of the product as possible. So I don't really understand. I guess I understand the point about taking the cost away from the consumer, but at the same time, that's a bit of a pipe dream, I think.
Well, there's also kind of a couple of things that he's getting into here. Also the idea that games are released incomplete, which I think is an overblown statement, or certainly an overused statement among gamers these days. It's not saying that it's not ever true, but it's one of those things like cartoonish or fluff or another. It's become another one of those buzzwords that gets thrown out there that can mean anything, but ultimately boils down to I'm not happy about something. I want to criticize it, and here's a fancy buzzword. Basically, that's my feeling on it. But I do think there's talking about a few different points in the article, it's perhaps a little bit unfocused, and I'm not trying to be nasty or anything here. But because he's kind of getting into some really good ideas and important discussions about DLC and freemium content, and actually the lone comment on the article is talking about posting images on Twitter, the official Twitter feed of Madden and Madden Ultimate Team and such, showing people pulling the best cards to make you think you've got a great chance. And I've seen that in both the basketball games as well. The whole idea of pumping the money in and the real microtransactions with real money, not just virtual currency, but real currency as well, and real currency to get virtual currency, that's also an issue. And that's where you're sort of getting to that freemium-like model. But you're still getting a pretty full-featured basketball game. Live has got its issues there, obviously, with its game modes, but 2K especially is pretty fully featured, so I don't entirely agree with that, but there are problems with microtransactions, so I don't disagree there.
Yeah, I agree with that factor.
Yeah, I think there are definitely some issues that do need to be ironed out.
And I guess the unfortunate thing is microtransactions are not going anywhere. It's obviously a big money maker for everyone, and you know what, if you are, as at least one person over at OS has indicated, if you're willing to stop putting $2,000 a year into your veins through illicit substances and dangerous lifestyle and actually spend that on a video game, well, that's your money, I guess. And I've heard that $2,000 on cards and a card collecting mode is actually small potatoes in the grand scheme of things, which is scary to me, because I think the most I've ever spent on those modes is about $20. So to spend $2,000 or more is certainly seems extreme to me. But hey, you know, if you've got the disposable income and that's how you wanted to do it, you know, there are ways. I know you've paid money, real money, Kenny, to get some cards in my team, but you've also earned some through doing the challenges in game. So you can stick to simply doing the in-game challenges and the in-game currency that can be earned therein.
Absolutely, and I think Two Bros Gaming have like quite a few videos on how like you can get the cards without having to spend real money. In fact, I know that his entire shtick is to pretty much only spend MT on cards. So, yeah.
Yes.
So there are ways to do it, but I guess like for somebody like me, I just like the quick and easy way, even if it isn't the cheapest way.
Well, you know, dropping a few bucks on it here and there is, you know, we've all done that with some DLC and such. And if you feel you're getting your money's worth, then I guess that's less of an issue as well, which is my basic philosophy when it comes to downloadable content. If you're happy with the, if you feel you're getting value for money, then
I think that's also the issue as well. But I'll save that rant for another time. Well, I think I've already had it. Now I think about it, but
I'd certainly like to revisit that discussion at some point as well, because he does kind of go into these three different areas that are. I see the point, and there's a few concerns there for sure. But as far as the advertising goes, I'm not that bothered, because it hasn't gotten to the point yet, at any rate. And, you know, I guess we could discuss Slippery Slope and Chicken Little, Sky is Falling philosophies here as well. But maybe it does, maybe they do put commercial breaks in. I think if it got to that point, people would be pretty upset. I don't think it's ever going to get to that level, though.
I really hope not.
Yeah, that would be pretty terrible.
But we also have another article to discuss this week, and this article is putting out some ideas about NBA Live 17. And I don't want to be nasty about this, because I do see the point of the article and what it's trying to make. But the article is basically saying that Live should, to save the brand, it should downgrade into a digital only release for at a cheaper price, and basically just be Pro-Am and Ultimate Team. And I see the logic in it, but I also think you would alienate so many longtime fans and fans who want to get back into NBA Live, myself included, being a longtime NBA Live player. The problem that Live has is that the modes aren't deep enough. The solution for me is not to take them out, but to make them better. And maybe you can't catch up to what 2K has done in a year. In fact, you certainly won't, but you can still do more than what you're doing at the moment and have a very satisfactory game, in my opinion. So, yeah, I have to disagree with the assertion. I do not want to see Live go down that route, guys.
No, it was a poorly written article in the sense that, you know, I don't think he really thought things through in what he was trying to, in what he was saying. Like,
well, as far as alienating the hardcore gamers who Live needs to appeal to, it certainly doesn't appeal to that. And in the long run, if you're not appealing to them, it's not a good business strategy. So, I mean, is it looking at it from a financials point of view? It is written for Forbes, so...
It was...
You strongly disagree, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yep.
Like, come on, sharpen the claws.
I put my foot in his ass just to correct some sense into him.
Jeez.
So, I mainly just skimmed the article, but I think he kind of lost me when he said that they should get rid of the franchise mode. And part of that reason is because I know, as a basketball gamer, one of the things I do between basketball video games is I look up rosters and I see, like, what the contracts are like, how I could, like, implement my style onto them, how I can, you know, which players I can implement into those squads. So to take out that whole idea of, you know, being a GM, that's just ludicrous to me. Like, that is the essence of basketball gaming. Like, when you talk about, like, the fundamental things that you need in a basketball video game, the ability to be a GM, that's number one.
Yes. So, some kind of multi-season mode with team management functions.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I mean, there are a few other things that I think you could add on to that list as well. But, yeah, the ability to manage your own team, that's fundamental to not just basketball games. That's every sport game.
Every sport game. I wrote an article this week in the Monday tip-off, why basketball games need robust modes. Did touch on this article a little bit in the course of writing that column. And I said in that article that you can check it right there on the NLSC, nba-live.com. go to the features tab. Basketball games need the season/team management franchise mode, the single-player career mode, some kind of card-collecting mode, and an online-connected experience like your Pro-Ams or an online league. At the very minimum, you just need to hit across those four, you know, those four or five key demographics that play basketball games. So the people that either have a specific preference for one of those five modes, those five approaches, or people who like to dabble. You need to cover all your bases there. Live kind of does, just not as deeply as it needs to be. And I absolutely do not dispute that Live needs more depth. You know, this is the feedback that I've given to the development team directly, and also talked about it at length in the forum as well, and on the podcast. Absolutely want to see that depth back in NBA Live like it used to be, that innovation and everything. Not take it away, because the big thing that I've seen from in our community about NBA Live, a lot of people are saying, well, we're kind of liking what the gameplay is bringing. Not so much the animation, still needs more polish there, but we're liking a lot of the stuff the gameplay is starting to do. But, and we like, and we think Pro-Am is a great idea, and Pro-Am is a great idea, and I had a lot of fun with it at the community event and have played it since, when the full version. But a lot of people have said, where's the NBA content in Live? Like, where's your Deep Dynasty mode and the Rising Star and that experience? So taking that out, again, I think is going to alienate your core basketball gamers, your core consumers. So I see what he's doing, what he's suggesting to save the franchise from a financial standpoint or something, or try and rebuild. But I think they have some solid foundations. So add to Dynasty, add to Rising Star, bring back roster customization, as we've said so many times before. Deepen those modes. Don't take them away.
Just adding on to the whole franchise mode idea as well, NBA 2K16 have two pretty much franchise modes, one My GM, the other one being My League. So
yes,
for NBA Live not to have one, I mean, I think...
suicide.
I think Live yeah. players would like just one mode that was equivalent to one of those modes that NBA 2K16 has, as far as like depth and like the experience is concerned. So, you know, NBA Live only needs
a quarter,
one.
You know, a few steps at a time. You bring back the ability to edit player numbers and jersey numbers and positions and such in Dynasty. You bring back the rumors, you bring back a lot of the trade transaction screens and everything like that. A lot of the basic functionality that's missing, and you add some extra bells and whistles. Dynasty cutscenes. I put that out for last week's Throwback Thursday on our social media. People were all saying, you know, we miss this in Live, these Dynasty cutscenes. You know, even little things like that on top of a robust and fairly deep mode, people will really enjoy it. You know, so...
Like, to be honest, yeah. I forgot Live had cutscenes in the Dynasty mode. I remember the couple little...
Yeah, because I only did it once, yeah. 2004.
Yeah, like, I remember some of the camera cutscenes, like with the cameraman sort of thing during the in-game stuff, but I didn't realize that the Dynasty mode had that feature to it. I don't think I had really gotten into a Dynasty mode back then. You know, I was more sort of modding and playing like some Play Now type games or just some of the street modes and sure. stuff that we used to make and all that stuff, so... Yeah, the fact that they had that stuff, even though it was for 1 year, it was pretty cool. I mean, it was kind of ahead of its time in a way, I think probably even more so.
Oh, Live, back in the day, Live did a lot of innovative things. Yeah. People forget that.
Yeah.
And I'd definitely like to see them do more of that. And now that the gameplay is a little bit more under control, definitely some things that need to happen with it, don't get me wrong. But now that they have made some progress there, it is definitely time to focus on the modes and not take them out, not downgrade to a digital title, because I think that, more than anything else, is the kiss of death.
Yep.
I think people are going to say, well, if that's what Live's going to be...
Next year's just going to be a mobile version, that's it.
Yeah, thanks for the memories, Live, you know, great memories, but now we're definitely all in for 2K if they take away those modes. So, yeah, I must disagree strongly with that suggestion. But hopefully they won't go down that route. I don't think so from the feedback that... we've been sending in and discussions with the developers at the last community event that I was at. But speaking of changes, and this is actually a positive change, but touching on a little bit of general gaming news, but also bringing it back to basketball gaming as well. One of the latest Steam updates is changing the way that the platform handles reviews. Now, traditionally, they've basically had, you know, mostly positive, mostly negative, kind of thumbs in the middle reviews, showing the overall spectrum of how people have been rating a game in the Steam community. And the latest update is looking to actually fix that, because there's going to be two review percentages, one that reflects the overall sentiment and another one dedicated to recent reviews. And I like this idea, guys, because games, as we mentioned before with our patch discussion, can evolve, especially these days with a lot more post-release support. So if you have a game that gets a lot better after release because of the patches, or conversely gets a lot worse, you can have those more recent reviews to say, well, okay, the overall review is this, and that's taking into every account since the game was released. But if you look at how the game is shaping up now, it's a lot better or a lot worse.
Yeah, well, a perfect example of that is Drive Club, for my mind. Like, that game had one of the rockiest releases and stuff. But the support that their studio, Phenomenal Evolution Studios, gave was phenomenal. And in result, yes, the studio's just recently been closed down. But they didn't give up on the game, and you know, people were waiting for a season two, like a second season pass, in hopes that, you know, to get more out of it, because they're still enjoying the game, and the work that they were doing and post support was just great. So, and you know, a lot of people were sort of down on the game because of its initial launch. And you know, they'll bring up the Metacritic scores and stuff like that from its initial release. So, not realizing, you know,
it's gotten better.
Oh yeah, and
yeah,
you know,
and it's the same with NBA 2K16 on PC, which of course is where these Steam reviews come in. But when it was launched, there were some problems with optimization, unfortunately, which left us, you know, once again, shout out to Left Us for all the help he gave us in the forum with the support, definitely going above and beyond in that respect. But there were some problems with optimization, a few bugs and crashes, and problems with the keyboard input, which was eventually patched. And also, what was the other bug? Oh, the controller icons went in direct pass and direct switch weren't showing up for certain controllers. One of the hot fixes for PC resolved that. So all that went into some very negative reviews at the start, at the launch of NBA 2K16 PC. But as the patches have come through and people have gotten a lot happier with the game, of course there are still complaints. And there's quite a few complaints about the Spike Lee story in the review. And that hasn't changed at all.
Can't patch that out.
Can't patch. There's no patch for that. That is an NBA 2K17 fix, that is. But it's...
Well, at least it was better than 2K15.
I'll give it that.
Yeah, that character was horrible.
Your character was at least more likable, yes. Yes, I'm happy to give my face to that character, even if it doesn't fit the rest of my family.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I do like the change, because you can get that recent feedback and say, well, the game has gotten better, as 2K16 PC has with the patches. So I think it's a logical change. You're not deleting those old reviews to try and cover it up. You're saying, yes, this is the overall feeling since the beginning of time, since the game was released, but you can see that it's gotten better. Or in some cases, you can see where it's become worse. So I think it's an absolutely a great move as far as changing that for Steam. Very logical.
It just, like, this whole conversation about games improving and whatnot, it just kind of reminds me of this experience I had at EB Games. I saw Watch Dogs there for $12, and I kind of was like, oh, I've heard nothing but bad things about this game, but it's $12, so I'll give it a go, see what it's like. And I went to the counter, and the guy was like, you know, this game started out really buggy, but they pushed some patches through and ended up really good. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't expect that at all, because I've heard nothing about... everything I've heard, it's just been like, oh, this game is one of the worst launch games of all time, and, you know, so buggy and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's definitely a change in the right direction as far as Steam reviews are concerned.
For me, Watch Dogs wasn't buggy. It was just, it just wasn't, the character wasn't great. And it was just felt like a poor attempt at Grand Theft Auto in some ways.
I've seen that a lot. I haven't actually played it. I will. One thing I will say for Watch Dogs is it made for a great Clueless Game episode on Conan.
It did some okay things, but. And then there was a lot of visual downgrades from when the initial trailer to release, and that pissed off a lot of people. And, you know, the sort of thing was hinting at, you know, hack everything kind of thing, and it kind of wasn't. And, you know, it just got very repetitive and all that stuff. So that was its downsides. Interested to see what they do with number two, which is coming out this year, from what I understand. So Obviously, we'll see more of that one at E3.
When you said hack everything, I had a flashback to hackers and hack the planet.
I think with me, like with those kind of sandbox games, I don't really put too much of an emphasis on like characters and stuff, because to me they're all about like creating as much havoc as you can. And I guess with like that, being able to hack like the traffic lights and stuff like that, it kind of appealed to that sense of, you know, wanting to create mayhem. But you know, I guess like when it comes to those sandbox games, Saints Row 2 is still like probably my favorite one, aside from maybe GTA San Andreas.
I'm actually going to try a Saints Row game. I've heard they are pretty crazy and pretty fun in that. The other thing I'd probably say,
I picked them up on a sale, because I'm traditionally a GTA guy, but I did pick them up on a Green Man Gaming sale, and yeah, they're definitely worth checking out.
Two is very solid. Like, I think I've only played two, so I can't speak for the rest of the games. But
I wasn't a big fan of two. I'm not as the driving controls feel a bit loose to me.
Okay.
And I know this is what everyone tunes into a basketball gaming podcast to talk about, but we do diversify from time to time. But yeah, I actually is I love the silly over the top tone with three and four. It's pretty entertaining.
All right, I'll have to check them out.
There is a definitive version for four or something, isn't there, for PS?
There is, yeah. I think it might even be available in Australia now that we have an R18 rating. So, yep.
I'll look into that.
So when they do the really R18 rating, my career story next year in 2K17, the game won't be banned. So fantastic!
Yeah,
they'll push through the M. Night Shyamalan story. Sweet.
He got game uncensored storyline.
How you really get recruited?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
It's the mini game that's going to be, you know, really push the rating up there. some hot coffee for sure. But before it is great to see, getting back to the basketball gaming, you know, 2K16 PC has improved, and yeah, absolutely a great great move for Steam there. And speaking of basketball gaming, that is obviously something we do every now and again, what being involved in the site as we are. It is that time of the week that we discuss our week in basketball gaming.
Puts it down! What a play!
Oh, that's a sweet finish right there.
And as I mentioned earlier in the show, Kenny, you and I, we got on to Pro-Am last week, 2K Pro-Am. I had played live, but not 2K Pro-Am yet. And we got in and we had a few games with, as you said, the Fighting Irish. And now, you know, I'm going to say our, because I've played three games with you, so now I'm just going to consider myself part of the team. I'm just going to muscle my way in there.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely a part now.
Playing a point guard there. I love that court. That court's fantastic. We as I said, we did play opponent twice actually with the KFC logo in the middle of the court. So that I did laugh at that. That was pretty funny.
Yeah,
but it was fun. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it definitely was a lot of fun having an extra person there, because yeah, usually we have to be a little reliant on the CPU characters, which can be a little bit hit and miss at times. But it's definitely a lot of fun in the mode, the more players you get. That's what we've found anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's obviously supposed to be a social, almost doing a Sean Connery. it's definitely a social oriented mode and a multiplayer mode. So yeah, sort of, I remember whenever the CPU was inbounding, I'm like, yep, give it to us. You just go over there. Especially when it was taking some bad shots. What are you doing? Oh, you're the CPU, that's right. I did have a little bit of overall rating envy, because you guys have obviously leveled up a lot more than I have on the PS4 version, and you're all not 88s and 90s, and I'm just popping into the game with 69 overall.
But it's just not like it really mattered in that first game, because you were just hitting everything. I mean, apart from that
65 three-point shooting.
I mean, apart from like that first one I tried to assist you on, you got blocked, but you know, that happens to everybody. I mean, I get blocked all the time. You just need to learn a good pump fake, I guess. Do a D-Wade. But
no, I made a few threes. I definitely love being the distributor.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that can be a lot of fun as well. I think that's lost on a lot of other online gamers. But yeah,
it was satisfying, you know, dishing to you and the X and Leo for. You know, the some sweet dunks and everything. I was like, I feel good. It pumped me up.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Just like what tossed, get, you know, throwing you the crisp pass and watching you guys finish. It's like, yeah, this is the fun, fast breaks and everything. Yeah, that's the essence of that mode. And same with live, but certainly, you know, experiencing for the first time with 2K, because 2K does have the different approach. And, you know, comparing the two, as you said to me, we were talking about afterwards, I've surely seen the best and the worst of 2K Pro-Am. And because Live and 2K have taken it from two different angles. Live is very player customization, whereas 2K is very team customization. And sort of a toss-up as to which one you prefer any time of the day, I guess. 2K, I kind of like that it has the proper rules.
Yeah.
But I also kind of like that Live doesn't. Because, for example, we played the three games over the course of a couple of hours or so. In Live, we could have probably played about, you know, 10 to 15 games of Live Pro-Am, because you've got the quicker game and the first to 21. And I think that's great for that social aspect as well, or even a social aspect. But sometimes it feels slow because you've got the fouls and everything. But at the same time, it also feels structured and less random. We built our way back from a couple of deficits a couple of times, yeah. Although we did lose a couple of games.
We did, yeah.
Which you can't necessarily do in the first to 21. You know, it gets to 21 and the game is over. You've lost. Whereas this, you've got more time to have a really competitive game. So it's, I think there's merit in both, and I like that both companies are doing different things with their Pro-Am.
Yeah, and I think like the Live Pro-Am that you're talking about, I think 2K's equivalent is My Park, because you have those type of games, yes, in My Park, yes. But they're usually like three on three. I think in Sunset Beach, you can get a 4-on-4 one. But yeah, you can do that in My Park. I prefer like the 2K Pro-Am a little bit more, because like particularly when you have a home game, you have that sense of like pride in your uniform, and you're like, oh, I want to protect my home court, you know, like there's that whole, yep, that sense. And like I didn't get that in Live Pro-Am, so I guess that's kind of like a little thing that just kind of makes me gravitate towards 2K Pro-Am a little more, I guess.
Yeah, which I totally understand. It's just that sometimes I do feel that the quicker game approach of Live has its benefits.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Especially when it got into a bit of a foul fest for a few plays there, I'm like, oh, it's really slow to a halt.
And the timeouts as well. The timeouts are a big problem, particularly when the defending team can call timeout on a play that shouldn't really happen.
And no, that's something I would change out.
And they tend to, a lot of the time, they call a timeout as you're about to take a free throw, and that's really like a trolley thing to do.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's something that I would probably suggest that they take out of the game for 2K17. There are a bunch of things I think they can fix, but overall as a mode, it's where I think it's at as far as like online modes are concerned for NBA 2K16.
Yeah, I mean, I know some people would prefer to play online team play like modes with real NBA teams, and it is important that you can play online with real NBA teams, but it is a lot of fun to have that your own player and getting in there and having these pickup games. And it's, like you say, that, like I said, it's a social aspect. It's, you can have the customization in 2K. Now, I wouldn't mind seeing some of that in Live if they were to do it that way, but Live is still going with the real venues, which I also think has a lot of merit as well. It is pretty cool to see Rucker Park and all those, and the Drew League venues that are going to be in Live 17, apparently. We haven't got official confirmation, but we do have. That was reported at least a couple of months ago. But again, yeah, I like that both games are doing separate things with it. And even though I would like to see in some modes overlap, like I do think that there are things in 2K's My Career that I would like to see in Rising Star, and certainly things in My League that I'd like to see in Dynasty mode. But with Pro-Am, definitely go different with it. You know, have some overlap to some extent with the customization, perhaps. But yeah, no, I definitely want to play again, basically.
Oh, that's good to hear, because, you know, the more the merrier, and hopefully at some point we can get Ben in on this. Yeah, what do you reckon, Ben?
Yeah, I'll jump in. I know, sort of got a busy schedule, especially with Uncharted 4 coming out.
Of course, yes, I do yeah. as well.
yeah, yeah.
Okay. I'm playing Uncharted 4 as well. But, I mean, just an open invitation, because I think we do it most weekends. But, I mean, even if we can't get the X or, as he's known on the forums, Valor, I don't think he's posted for a while, but that's what Leo's forum name is. But even we could even just, like, get us three on at the same time if those other two are unavailable, so... just to kind of give you a taste of the mode.
And since you actually are rated pretty well, as opposed to... I'm up to 70 now. I'm in the 70s, so I'm a slightly lesser shade of useless now.
You're moving on up.
Yeah, yeah.
I did
spend VC on it, but it was VC that I earned in-game. So.
Yeah, that's always a good thing. Well, I'm into my 8th season at the moment, so it's taken like a fair bit of grinding for me to get up to my 91 overall rating.
I use some pre-order VC to get to the 69 overall. So,
well, do you remember what you started at before getting up to that? Before you,
it's like 60s or something, okay. High 50s, low 60s.
I think it's mid 50s. Yeah, I think you start.
That's actually something else that I do like about live, because you start at mid 70s as well. So,
I think
so. Pro-Am's a little bit better off the bat.
I guess, yeah. When I played live pro am, I was able to get to like 80, and that's what the cutoff was for the demo. So
for the demo, yep, that's right. But no, it's absolutely fun. You know, I'm not a big online gamer, as I say so often in my articles, because of this thing. But it's because of the quitters and all that stuff. But you know, we didn't encounter that in pro am. Have you really encountered any quitters or people who really ruin games like that? Or?
The thing is, in Pro-Am, when people quit the game, I think what happens is the CPU just takes over their player. So, I mean, I think they can technically forfeit the game, but I haven't seen that yet. And I think as a main rule of thumb, most people try and stay in the game for as long as possible.
Yeah. Which is the way it goes. We had some competitive games. We went into overtime in the last game, but
yeah.
We clawed our way back. But just
yeah, that was really like we all took that loss pretty hard in the party. We were just like, can't believe we lost these guys again, because they were terrible free throw shooters. And I was like, I was telling them like down the line, I was like, look, we might have to use a hacker strategy at some point, but we never really implemented it, unfortunately. So,
because they came in, they had like a 25% winning percentage.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, we just beat this other team that had a higher percentage, so I'm feeling pretty good about our chances.
So,
and then all of a sudden...
I feel like there's something I have to mention as well. Before you started playing with us, we had this discussion. I'm not mentioning this player's name because... our rule is we're never going to mention his name again, because when we started having a discussion about a particular shooting guard from the Golden State Warriors being potentially the best shooting guard in the league, we think the other team went on like a 15-0 run and we ended up losing the game. So the shooting guard from the Golden State Warriors is practically Voldemort to us now. We cannot mention his name ever in discussion. At least in a pro-am game.
Hmm.
So, yes. I think the trigger for the Kiwi boys to play well was talking about Kirk Penny. And strangely enough, I played really well when we were talking about Nathan Jawai. So those are the sweet points.
Oh, baby Shaq.
Yes, Outback Shaq.
Outback Shaq.
So, that's one thing, I guess... I wanted to bring up with you before we had like another go. It's just
sure, and of course, by that play, of course, you mean Ian Clark, don't you? So
you said it. I can't believe you said it.
The best shooting guard in the league. Well, look at the Warriors' record. Prove me wrong, people. So, before we go on to the NBA stuff, anything you want to share about your gaming this week, Ben?
No, I hadn't really done too much except for just sort of test out some of the rosters where I could actually get some of those classic players in it. I think I've played one game, and you know, it's just sort of finding how I want to start the team and the and how long I want to play for minutes wise and stuff like that. So yeah, it's just, you know.
And you've got Eddie Jones, haven't you?
Yep, I got Jones.
Steady Eddie.
I got Zoe, Wade. I'm still trying to get a few guys on that. So, like, I want to possibly bring in Ray Allen as well.
Oh yeah,
or yep. Penny Hardaway, even though he only played a couple of games.
that's what I did.
Yeah, you know, just sort of yeah, bringing a couple. I got Tim Hardaway as well. So.
Oh, right on. He was a great player for the he was a great player for the Warriors as well.
Warriors, yeah.
As well,
but he was for the Heat.
Yep.
not so much for the Pacers.
No.
Or the Nuggets.
Yeah. Or the Mavericks. Or, yeah, okay, so the Heat and the Warriors, he was a great player.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's still just sort of fine-tuning it all. And, again, since been playing so much of one mode, getting used to the different timing and rhythm and spots for different players for their shots and stuff. So yeah, it's just all that kind of stuff, getting used to it and that. So it'll probably take me a little bit more time to get settled in that mode and that, and finalize the roster that I want to have. So yeah.
I like the idea of having both Hardaways together. That'll be fun.
Yeah. I did have to change LeBron's. In this one roster that I tried, LeBron was still on the Heat.
Yep.
So I changed his number to 23, because
Eddie Jones.
Yeah, because seeing him in number 8 was just not right. So
is that why you like number 6?
Yeah.
Because that's your number as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but it turns out I was actually wearing that before he was.
Oh, well, there you go.
Because I started wearing that in 96.
Well, he changed to 6 that year because he was 25 as a rookie in his sophomore season.
Yeah.
But then they retired that for the Gail Goodrich?
Yeah. I mean, I could have worn it in grade 8, but I wore number 13 because it was kind of close to Jordan's number. And generally, the 13, 14, and 15 jersey numbers were the larger sizing. So,
yes. I found that out as someone who likes the number 4, who also was a tall kid growing up. So
yeah, but no, I changed it in 96, and I think there was only one year in high school where I couldn't wear it because it had disappeared. The jersey number had disappeared, so I had to wear number 9, which was the backup number.
Of course, upside down 6,
yep.
Jordan's
yep.
Dream team number,
yep.
Of course. And I thought maybe she might go into a story about how your jersey was stolen out of the locker room and then you had to wear number 9 and had a great game after that. So. I like Michael Jordan wearing number 12. Greatest player to wear number 12, sorry, John Stockton. I guess it doesn't count when it's only one game.
Yeah, but yeah.
All the same. So that's pretty much it for our week in basketball gaming. We'll, of course, keep you informed and want to know what you're playing as well, so let us know in the comments and take the discussion to the forum. Want to get some more discussion going there about tips and tricks and yeah, just fun experiences playing basketball games. That's what the forum is for, not just to talk about modding, although we certainly do some great things with that. Be sure to check out all the latest releases naturally, but also talk about your experiences with the games and share your experiences with your fellow basketball gamers. Always fun to hear about and good to get advice as I hit you up with Kenny last week for my team advice.
Yeah, well, I try and do the best I can, I guess, with my knowledge from the game. But, I'll see what I can do.
You hear Antoine Carr, the big dog, in the background there.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Well, Glenn Robinson, two big dogs. So a lot of big dogs around your way, as you were saying before we started recording.
Yes, I'm live in a neighborhood full of big dogs.
Well, we will press on to the NBA discussion this week. The 2016 playoffs roll on. We're in the second round now because we all got our predictions wrong last week. So we're into the second round. We've got the Raptors against your Heat, Ben. We've got the Cavs against the Hawks. The Spurs, of course, against the Thunder. And the Warriors against the Blazers. The Raptors trail the Heat 1-0, 0-1, I guess. The Cavs, with their record-setting 25 three-pointers, just blew away the Hawks in game two to go up 2-0. The Spurs also destroyed the Thunder in their first game, but then lost kind of controversially in the second game with some really extracurricular stuff on the sidelines there, some pushing and shoving. And despite Curry still being out, the Warriors overcame first three quarters where the Blazers were playing pretty well, but then they just lost it as the Warriors came storming back, and the Warriors are now up 2-0. So a couple of series 2-0, 1-1 for the Spurs and Thunder, and the Raptors trailer Heat 0-1. How are the playoffs shaping up for you, Ben?
Happy my teams made it through, obviously, to the second round. And I was glad that, you know, the Hornets made it a series and, won a three games and that. So, you know, they got a bright future ahead and that. So, and they're not a laughing stock or joke anymore. I think that they got a seriously good young team and that, with a couple of vets that they need and that. So, I think.
More than just a crying meme is what you're saying.
Yes. So. You know, they didn't disgrace themselves at all. You know, they lasted longer than Houston. I think they did well. And obviously,
I watched Game 6 of that series, and it is actually one of the most enjoyable games I've watched all year. Because, and you know why? Because it wasn't somebody one. There was no one player tossing up 15 three-point attempts. I've come to the conclusion, guys, that I don't like watching three-point shooters. And I can't fault the Warriors for playing this way because you can't really argue against 73-9 or, you know, storming the way towards a back-to-back title as they are certainly in decent position, to say the least, to do. But it was just the style of basketball I liked. Certainly I don't hate three-point shooting, but it seems to be the excess three-point shooting that I just don't find very appealing brand of basketball. But watching Al Jefferson go to work in the paint, watching the clutch plays by Kemba Walker and Dwayne Wade, of course they did include a few threes there, but yeah, that was just a really great game to watch. I'm glad I caught it.
Yeah, you know, it was probably one of the more interesting series in the first round, I feel.
And I just love the Hornets logos and branding.
Yeah,
no, they actually came with a modern logo. They're not just another circle. It's not just a circle or an old school logo. It's actually a good looking logo. I think the Hornets have always had pretty good jerseys and logos though. So,
well, the first one, like when they became the Bobcats, no, but yeah, the Hornets. Yeah, I think.
Oh, strictly Hornets.
Yep, yep.
not so much Bobcats. No.
Well, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and the Heat that steal game one from Toronto and on the road and that, so that was a good effort. It took overtime, but they did it and that, so.
Took a half-court heave to even get into overtime in the first place. That was pretty
exciting. Yeah.
You think you've escaped with that three-point win and then.
Yeah. But, hopefully this will be a good series as well. But I really hope the Heat make it through. If they don't, expectation from the beginning of the season was potentially second round from memory, from what I said. So, you know,
I think that's what you said. Yeah.
So they've already. Yeah.
And Bosch has been ruled out.
Yeah.
He's officially been ruled out for the playoffs.
So and the fact that they're able to do that without him, you know, is pretty good sign. You know, they've got a pretty good solid team and that. I'm happy with things are going. And yeah, I think if the Heat were to get through, and it'd make for a very interesting Eastern Conference Finals if it was Heat versus Cavaliers, because given the few times that LeBron's had to play in Miami, like the Cavs have played in Miami since LeBron's been back, he hasn't really played in those games. They sort of sat him out, so it'd be something that they can't afford, the Cavs couldn't afford to do in this case, so.
Yeah, that would certainly be a blunder if they they lose in the Eastern Conference Finals to that, and quite embarrassing for, you know, will he take his talents back to South Beach, perhaps, if that happens. Speaking of injuries, there's been murmurs from Stephen Curry himself that he might be back for Game 3, which would be well ahead of the 2 weeks out. I'm not a Warriors fan for various reasons. I do certainly respect their ability, but certain things this season have turned me off being as happy as I was when I saw them win the 2015 championship, which I did enjoy watching them win that, but have soured on them a little since. But I think that's pretty bad idea. I mean, they're doing pretty well without him. They're 4-1 without Curry in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to have much resistance until they face the Spurs. I think if Curry comes back in Game 3 in the Motor Center on the Blazers court, where so many players have gone down with injury over the years, I mean, he's coming back with it from a knee injury that's serious enough to have him out at least 2 weeks. If he comes back early, he could be done for the playoffs, if not worse. No, I think the smart money would be to sit out.
Yeah, I reckon so. If the Warriors just suddenly lose like a couple of games and, you know, on the verge, then yeah, bring him back. But yeah, if your team's up and on potentially going to win this series quite comfortably in that, then yeah, there's no need to rush him. Save him for when you do really need him, and just give him all that extra time in the world to heal. So yeah.
Because they will definitely need him against the Spurs, I would have to imagine. And
yes.
I still see the Spurs coming out of that series, even despite that 1-point loss
to the
Thunder the other day. I think of Kobe as well. You know, people talk about how he was a warrior, pushing through those injuries back in 2013, and you know how he walked off the court after blowing out his Achilles. And I'm thinking, yeah, but he also pushed so hard through a lot of injuries towards the end of that season that he did blow out his Achilles. And had a couple of really injury-plagued seasons.
Yeah, and look how bad he looked after playing like 8 minutes. It was the last few weeks of the season and that, but still, he looked like he'd basically just been hit by a freaking truck, followed by a steamroller, followed by a unicycle, just for a good measure.
A unicycle, yeah. But he did follow that up with a 60-point game to finish his career, so I guess the...
I think there's also another part of that culture as well, where somebody like LeBron James, who like severely cramped up in that NBA Finals game, was getting mocked for, you know, not coming back onto the court. So,
Derrick Rose.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, you know, it was the last game of the season. He didn't play, did he, Derrick Rose?
Yeah, he sat out. Yeah.
And you know,
did not play. Rest was the did not play.
Yeah.
I guess you got some important stuff coming up in the off season.
Yeah,
I don't know whether as this is something like I might have read about another player, but I know that I think I read that Grant Hill, like part of the reason why he got so badly injured was because he wanted to play through and prove that he didn't, wasn't just after a paycheck or whatever, or you know, I don't know what.
I've read that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So like. I think we need to kind of place a bit more importance of people being fully recovered rather than, you know, pushing them to get back to the court before they're ready.
Yes, yes.
Because we missed out on a hell of a player with Grant Hill. Like, I mean, he was able to stick around, but, you know...
Not the same.
What he was before injury, wow, you know.
Oh, I would... It may be a stretch, but I feel he was kind of... In a way, LeBron before LeBron.
He was. I mean,
as far as being an all-around talent.
Coast to coast, you know, getting the rebound and then dunking at the other end. He was an amazing talent. And, you know, had he have sat in those games instead of playing and, you know, aggravating the injury further, you know, we could have seen his prime go on a little bit further. But
I mean, he's even talked about at one point it was almost life-threatening. With the way it became infected and everything, his injury and all the issues with his broken foot. I mean, you look at someone like Chris Bosh, who's got this potentially serious injuries with his blood clots. I mean, we talk about continuing the basketball career, but what about living past 40? I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's far more important than a game, for sure.
Yeah. But I don't think they're going to need Curry to finish off the Blazers. I think the Blazers might be able to get a game at home. They certainly blew a chance in Oakland in Game 2. But, you know, they can still hold their heads high because this was supposed to be a rebuilding year for the Blazers, and they've done pretty damn well.
Yeah,
but,
you know, there was no way I expected them to make the playoffs, especially after so many key players leaving. at the end of the off season with free agency and that. So, yeah, it's again one of those things where the team can hold their head up high. You know, they've exceeded expectations. So,
Hornets, Pistons, and Blazers all have had pretty good seasons for supposedly rebuilding teams.
Yeah.
So it is nice to see. I would also like to see the Bulls in there, but they're in the rebuilding phase themselves. Let's see Simmons. Let's get that number one pick for the Lakers. Let's beat the odds, you know.
I'd laugh if that did happen. Just to see all the salty Laker fans. I can suck on that crying meme.
I wouldn't mind seeing Boston get it, but I don't know what their odds are like.
Well, they've got about 3 or 4 picks thanks to the Brooklyn trade. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So
that's and possibly Durant if you believe the rumors. So well, he's going everywhere this offseason. So that's usually the way it goes.
Come on, Denver. I mean,
you might end up with Chandler Parsons. He just opted out.
That's true. He would be a nice addition as well. Although I think I'd prefer Kevin Durant at this point. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah. I'd probably go Durant over Parsons, you know. No disrespect to Parsons, but Durant is at least slightly better. So
only slightly, though.
Slightly, you know.
Neither of them are as good as Gordon Hayward, though. Let's be honest.
No Scalabrinis in this league anymore, literally. It's funny, I was playing NBA Live 2002 to finish up my review for it the other day, and I was playing with the Nets, and Scalabrine, like a rookie Scalabrine, is on there, and I was tempted to just put him in and just really abuse the pump fake cheese to just get him like 40 points or something to the power forward. I didn't. Maybe next time. I might play one more game before I finish up my review. So Scalabrine, the GOAT, the God. But it will be an interesting off-season. Something else that's happening this off-season, the NBA is coming to Australia, sort of. The first Basketball Without Borders camp is going to be held in Melbourne, and not Melbourne, but Melbourne, this year.
Dandenong
one. Yeah, it's a Dandenong, yeah.
So, yeah, great great for Australian youth basketball.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and it's something that obviously a lot of Australian basketball fans have wanted for a long time, and, you know, the NBA has hinted, you know, trying to expand the game out here a little bit more and promote it more out here. So hopefully a first step of many things to come, including hopefully at least some form of exhibition game or preseason game or regular
season. Maybe even a regular season game. Yeah. I mean, they've done it in London, yeah. So why not? You know, as much as we ripped on the NBL, I'm pretty sure our Pro League is better than the British Basketball League.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when was the last time the British men's team was even potentially close to getting a medal in the Olympics?
Yeah, I mean, we've come fourth. Fourth! That's almost good enough to get bronze.
Yeah. Twice.
So, yeah, that would be great to see, and obviously great to raise the profile in Australia of basketball, because I mean, obviously, there are basketball fans in Australia. We have 3 of them on the podcast, and hopefully we're not the only 3 in the whole country. I don't think so. But we know at least a couple more that we play with online, for a start. But, it is great to see. And I would have loved something like this when I was a kid, obviously. So I with this being a youth-oriented thing, that is obviously great, but that leaves us out in the cold. So definitely, if we get some preseason exhibition games, or even regular season, yeah, I'd love to see it.
Even the return of, like, the jam session stuff that they used to do years ago, and it'd be going, like, yeah, grade 8 yeah. or 9. Yeah, that was awesome as hell, you know. And, you know, I got to shake hands with Hakeem Olajuwon, and damn it, who else was there that year? I don't know if it was Kenny Smith or something. There was someone else with him. But, yeah, you know, I got to see them, shake hands with them, talk to them and that. Obviously, because I snuck into a section I wasn't supposed to, but I saw my opportunity. I took it, damn it.
We're settled by convicts. What are you supposed to do? We're supposed to follow the rules? We're the rebel nation.
Yeah, exactly.
Crying out loud.
Exactly.
But that is great to see for Australian youth basketball. Hopefully we get some more NBA stuff in Australia, where we'll be able to get a close-up look in the future on the ads on the jerseys. How's that for a smooth segue? Uh-huh. Trademark smooth segue by me right there. But you dug up this article today, Ben. There's reports on what which ads teams are going to be able to feature on jerseys, and basically they're not going to be able to do tobacco, gambling, alcohol, or anything that conflicts with any competing brand with Nike, which I'm not surprised. I thought that would be the case.
Yeah, you know, I heard some people speculating, or you're saying, oh, does that mean, like, before this obviously was confirmed, and that, you know, it's like, oh, could Adidas buy ad space and all that stuff to get their logo on? And it's like, yeah, I don't think Nike would want that to happen, so...
No.
So, no, I think, yeah, right move in that sense. Otherwise, it'd be a bit of weird confusion. It's like, what the hell is who's making what? I mean, I can understand if it was Puma and Adidas in a way, because it was actually two brothers that founded those two companies and that. They just had a fight. And they,
yes.
So, yeah, that's the history of those two companies.
Well, here's a question. Obviously, the current rules don't allow players to wear branding outside of their shoes. If the teams are allowed to turn players into mobile billboards, so to speak, do you think that players should be able to wear a Nike headband, for example?
Well, they were able to a few years ago.
Really? In the NBA?
Well, they had, like, some of the accessory stuff, you know, like the arm sleeve, shooting sleeves, compression stuff.
Oh, you got the, yeah, those ones, I suppose. You don't have the logo, though, do you?
Well, the uniform code changed a couple of years ago into the Adidas contract.
Right, okay.
And then all the compression gear that they wore did become all Adidas-based stuff. So you're not seeing as much McDavid or Nike stuff like you used to, like, the couple of years beforehand and that.
But I mean, like, really blatant, like, have a swoosh on the Nike swoosh on the headband. Or years ago, I remember, this is the story that I fall back on, is that Chris Gatling, the Energizer Bunny, according to NBA Live 96 and his nickname field, he wanted to wear his number 32 on his headband, and the NBA wouldn't allow it because you can only have the NBA logo or nothing. So if they're going to have billboards, so to speak, a little bit of advertising on the jerseys, will they relax a little on that accessories? Although I do remember that Scottie Pippen had his Pip armband back in the day, so...
Yeah, you know, there's been some form of personalization. Obviously, T-Mac had his T-Mac shooting sleeve, like his calf sleeves and stuff like that.
Actually, Tim Duncan had that skull knee pad, which is pretty badass.
And Zoe had that chrome face mask and that when he broke his nose or cheek or something.
Yep.
That was cool. Like, yeah, I'd rock that if I broke my nose. And, I know. I think they'll keep it how they did it with the Adidas contract, that it would purely be the one brand only, and that'd be the manufacturing one. So obviously it'd be the Nike gear and such. And it's kind of weird because given that, yeah, it's got like the Punisher style skull from the looks of the image.
Duncan's knee pad, yeah, it was a Punisher. Yeah.
I was trying to remember and I got distracted by that. damn it. Give me a second.
I do what I can.
It's like a set of breasts, it just distracts.
I knew there was a reason why he was my favorite player.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Underrated charisma is Tim Duncan.
Oh, for sure.
I cannot remember what the hell I was going on a tangent then.
Oh, well. Is there anything else about the ads on the jerseys? I mean, we've talked about it before, so I guess we're not huge fans, but as long as they're not too intrusive, I guess it's a trial run. So, I mean, I guess if there's controversy, maybe it'll get canned after a couple of years.
I will say this, that the NBL does not have enough ads on jerseys. I've said this before, but I'll say it again. You know, it's just something, you know, there's still room on the shoulders, guys, you know?
Yeah, we want to go the full NASCAR, right? You know, the whole, or we should probably say Bathurst, you know, the V8 supercar. we should keep it
actually,
local.
It won't be the V8s anymore. They announced that last week, that it's more an open competition to bring in more car companies in that. So you can be V6, it can be V8, you can be in V12s apparently. So yeah, then that was when that was just over a week now when they announced it. So yeah,
I miss Peter Perfect. May he rest in peace.
Yeah. That was a weird...
King of the Mountain.
That was a weird week, that one.
Yeah, Steve Irwin and then...
Peter Brock.
Colin Tealy, who wrote Storm Boy.
That's right.
The Australian author. Yeah. Happens in threes. Yep. What can you say? Speaking of branding, this has just been confirmed by our good friend Conrad, but there's going to be a new logo for the Pistons. And it's basically kind of a newer version of their old logo, really.
Yep, and I sent you guys something in the Skype thing that someone pointed out that it actually looks like our NBL logo.
Yes.
Which is kind of funny because it's the font that's probably even used in that NBL is probably even closer to what the Detroit Pistons used back in their original attempt at that logo back in the 80s and that. So, who copied who?
And the just to add an extra trivia note to that, the Pistons trace their history back to the Fort Wayne Zollner Pistons in the American NBL from 1941 to 1948 before they joined the Basketball Association of America, and which became the NBA. So the NBL connection is there all over the place, I guess.
Yeah.
I had to look that up because I was pretty sure they were an NBL team, same way as the Chicago American Gears, which George Mikan played for before the Minneapolis Lakers. I've done too much NBA trivia over the years, I think. this is why I couldn't remember any maths in high school, you know. The important stuff that I remember, damn it. It's a nice logo, I guess. It's a classic logo. That's about the best thing I can say about it. I'm a bit, as I said last week with the Kings logo, I'm a bit over
Randall.
The really retro logos coming back, to be honest.
I mean, if it was the horsepower one, you know, before we started recording, if it was the horse-paced one,
that would be
a bit more interesting. And
I'll give you the fact that the teal wasn't the best color scheme.
Well, they did rebrand it.
They did the blue and red one.
Yep. Which
I reckon they should have kept that, to be honest. But even their current logo I like. But yeah, it's I guess it is what it is. They're going to change it whether we like it or not. So. Any thoughts on the logo, Kenny?
Well, you know, I think that logos should represent an era, and by recycling, you know, one from, what is it, the 80s? Is that where it's from?
Yeah. That one was used from, like, the 80s up until 96, yeah.
I don't know. I would like to see something more contemporary, because it is fun to look back in the past and see what logos used to look like, and if people look back to the 2010s or whatever they're called and just see like an 80s logo, they're not going to get like a real feel of what the 2010s were really about. So I guess that's just
besides, isn't retro supposed to be 20 years behind, which would actually be the horsepower logo at this point. Yeah. So
that's true.
I'm just waiting for that 90s, that 90s show to be made.
They just decided to retro the retro.
not a fan, but well, My favorite team hasn't changed their logo since the 60s, so I guess I shouldn't talk. Hey, here's another trivia note for you guys before we get to our bold predictions this week. LeBron James is now officially more successful than Michael Jordan in the playoffs.
Yeah, and Wade also just surpassed Jordan in blocks
for the postseason.
Yeah, for the postseason or blocks. Yeah, yes, that was. I was trying to remember something I hadn't looked up again in that since officially hearing it. So, you know, trying to remember the information off the top of your head is like, yeah, wait, hang on. Yep. Okay.
Hey, I pulled out George Mikan and the Chicago American Gears. You know, lift your game, Ben. How dare you have other interests, Ben? but no, what that LeBron has surpassed Michael Jordan in total playoff victories. Michael Jordan had 119 wins in 179 appearances. LeBron has 121 now. In 184, so very similar percentages, actually. But I will point out that 6-0 is better than 2-4. but you know, it does speak to LeBron's legacy and how successful he's been. I mean, 5 straight NBA finals, you certainly can't take that away from him. You can talk about all the Easter's week, whatever. You play the competition you have, and to have that continued success, and even the whole decision of going to Miami, you've still got to get the job done at the end of the day. Look at the Lakers in 2004 when they put together that super team with Shaq, Kobe, Peyton, and Malone, and still lost to that a gritty Pistons team in the finals. I mean, you've got to take care of business at the end of the day, and LeBron certainly has done that at least twice in the finals, and to get there four other times is certainly no mean feat. I saw an article by or opinion on ESPN. I gotta love ESPN. that Draymond Green is the best all-around player in the NBA these days, and he is a fine all-around player. But is everyone just sleeping on LeBron? I mean, I know Stephen Curry's been grabbing highlights, but LeBron's still a pretty damn good player.
Yeah, I think like his game has just sort of been steady and hasn't progressed much, or you know, he's just been consistent in a way, and, you know, so it's nothing new to talk about. And whereas, you know,
I guess, but are we taking him for granted? Like towards the end of Jordan's career, I guess people maybe took him for granted a little bit, which sounds odd to say about someone who's often called the greatest player of all time. But what, as you say, once you've seen that consistent greatness, does it not surprise you? Whereas Curry has done something amazing this season, and don't want to take that away from him. But I don't know. Maybe it's just because I loved his role in Amy Schumer's Trainwreck last year. That kind of, and now, of course, Space Jam 2. I mean, LeBron has finally won me over again. Maybe that's it. But yeah, I feel he's perhaps not getting his due anymore, which sounds odd for such a prominent player. But I don't know. There's a new flavor of the month for ESPN, I suppose.
Well, yeah. I mean, they can't continue riding the same horse, can they? So they got to try and make new.
They did with Kobe for about 20 years. So.
They got to try and milk something somewhere, so that way they, you know, they can keep relevant and up to date and all that stuff. So yeah,
Kenny, I know you really want to hear Jalen Rose's thoughts on all this. So,
yeah, absolutely. You both know how I feel about Jalen Rose. I, you know, it's
more of a Juwan Howard man.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, it's interesting the whole thing about LeBron. I do think he has been a bit overshadowed this season by the whole Warriors success, and you know, fairly so, because what they did was amazing. But yeah, I just think it'll be to the other team's peril if they end up sleeping on him, which, you know, that's probably not going to happen with the other teams. But if you're a fan of another team and you sleep on LeBron, you might end up being a Jordan crying meme, you know?
Yes. Man, we need a new meme. The Hawks did it to themselves. I got to give them some credit for that, I suppose. When they great comments actually on the Hawks Twitter when they're getting blown out and Cavs are knocking out all those threes today. And so one of the comments was if you take away all their threes, we're right in this. So, I love optimism. But speaking of optimism, it's come to that time of the week of the NLC podcast where we talk about and throw out our bold predictions. And we got them all wrong last week, gentlemen. Yeah. Kenny, you fell on your sword so that you wouldn't have the perfect record to maintain. The Clippers did not push the Blazers to Game 7. Came pretty close. Jamal Crawford had a chance down the stretch, actually.
Well, in that game. That was unfortunate, but, you know, it ended up being a pretty decent game, and Austin Rivers, to his credit, showed a lot of guts. I make a lot of jokes about him, or at least made one joke about him last podcast. But he really proved what he was made of in that game, and you know, I got to give him credit for that. Just not good enough to get me
80s grit that took me back to the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
The blood streaming on his face, hell of a shot. I helped you out, Ben, by picking the Hornets to advance past the Heat. I jinxed them. Nobody jinxes like me. Novu posted in the forum about the Raptors beating the Heat, and I got the screenshot of Conan O'Brien from the Simpsons and put the caption on, "Only I am a jinx."
Yeah, I saw that.
So I was wrong, and Boston, much to Jasmine's regret, I'm sure, you know, we commiserate with you, John. Boston will not advance, but they have many draft picks and possibly a chance to get Kevin Durant, maybe. So, but we were all wrong. This week, I'm going to say that the Trailblazers will win at least one game, avoiding the sweep.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, that was pretty much what I was going to say, is I need to look for something. I'm going to say that I think Atlanta will avoid the sweep. Sorry.
Atlanta will avoid... Don't sleep on the Hawks. Don't sleep on a Hawks sweep.
Kyle Korver, man. He might bring the hot sauce next game. You never know.
Stacey King, hot sauce.
And I'm going to say... I'll say that the Heat and Raptors series, both teams will win a game. So it'll be 1-1. Or it'll be 2-1. Yeah, it could be potentially... So if they play in two games, both teams could win one of those two games in the next week.
Okay, so they're going to split the next two.
Yeah, I fumbled that one up pretty nicely, didn't I?
It's okay, you're still doing better than my 4 of 20. 4 of 21, actually. That should be.
And my soon to be 2 of 4.
So we're all hovering around that 50% mark. So you know, but 50 wrong. Well, actually, I'm not. I'm 4 of 21. I'm really Allen Iversing it right now. But, wow. So, coming up from being a Hall of Famer deserves more credit than that. But he certainly did have some inefficient games. Antoine Walker, let's take a shot at him instead.
Yeah.
I was thinking John Starks myself, but...
Oh, the Game 7 of 1994. Yeah, wow. So those are our bold predictions. We will see how we do next week. Of course, we will continue to discuss the playoffs and anything else that happens in the next week, but that is bringing us to the end of episode number 157 of the NLSC podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, keep tuning in every week. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and also catch us on Stitcher. If you'd like to listen to us on the go, download the app and search for NLSC podcast. You'll find us there. You can also connect with us on social media. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/thenlsc. We're on Twitter @thenlsc. And of course, the NLSC itself, if you need another reminder of the URL, is nba-live.com. We are your source for basketball games. But that's all for this week. So I'm Andrew.
I'm Arcane.
And I'm Kenny.
And I'll give a shout out to Sean Respite. See you next week.
See you next week.